Jo, der
ja. Vent litt på. Må skru av.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's see. Let's see if this is working now. I got confirmation.
Sorry?
I will have that anyway, or is it me?
Should I turn it a bit?
Okay. At least I got confirmation that online they can hear and see and do everything.
I don't know.
We'll see what happens. I guess I get feedback on the quality if it's dropping. Is that coming from your speaker? Oh, it's from there? There is an echo, though. Yeah. I have no idea how to solve that. I will check that later. Let's try to ignore that and just get started with the teaching. Crypto today. We'll start with an introduction and with some classical crypto systems. I hear two echoes. Okay, this is the overview of everything that we'll do in the maybe I should turn off the sound. If that helps. It was me. Sorry. Okay, this is everything that we'll do in crypto. We'll start with a general introduction, and I'll do that today, and I will tell you something about classical crypto systems. And then next week we'll take the symmetric crypto, which has a lot of different subjects in it. And then the last week will be hash functions and the asymmetric crypto. Let's start with the introduction. First, when we talk about cryptology, actually we're talking about two different things there. One is called cryptography and one is called cryptanalysis. And this is a definition I found online. It's just any definition I could have found, probably another one. Cryptography, so the first part, cryptography is a method of storing and transmitting data in a particular form so that only those for whom it's intended can read and process it. Remember from last week when we talked about confidentiality? Confidentiality meant that a sender can send something to a receiver and both of them can see what the message entails, but the other ones can't. So this is more or less just focusing on confidentiality, but yeah, we get an idea what cryptography is. Cryptography is making good systems, making sure that the sender and the receiver are the only ones who can get access to the message and nobody else. So cryptography is protecting information. On the other hand, cryptanalysis, again a rather random definition which I found online, cryptanalysis refers to the study of ciphers, ciphertext, or cryptosystems with a view to finding weaknesses in them that will permit retrieval of the plain text from the ciphertext without necessarily knowing the key or the algorithm. Some of these terms are not defined yet, but that will come. But here you see that finding weaknesses. So in cryptanalysis, we're trying to break the cryptosystems. So cryptology actually has two sides. We're trying to make something secure for ourselves, and we're trying to break the security of other people. Yeah, so both are a part of the cryptology, and both will also be in this course. So here we have a text. So anybody knows what that means? I'll give you a hint. The hint is wingdings. Does anybody know what wingdings are? Is it a useful hint? Sorry? Yeah, it's a font. So try if you start Word or whatever and set the font to windings and see if you can figure out a bit what this is. Just type various letters and see if you find something. Yeah. You see that here, this letter and this letter is the same, and there is this square here. And these two are the same. So there are some hints already. Actually, it says not so secure. Yeah, if I wouldn't have given you the hint, you might have searched for a long time. But with that hint, or with knowing a bit of what I've been doing, you might very easily decipher this. Doesn't seem really secure, right, if I do something like this. But as trivial as this are methods that are were used. In the World War II, the part where the Americans were fighting the Japanese, they were using Navajo Indians. And Navajo Indians were speaking a dialect, or a language, I should say, that was extremely rare. Japanese were aware of a number of Indian languages, and they could understand them, but the Navajo Indian language was so extremely rare that none of the Japanese could speak that, could understand that. So the Navajo Indians could just speak their own language. Yeah, so the sender and the receiver were a Navajo Indian, and they could talk to each other. And none of the Japanese could understand what was going on. And so that was a kind of a crypto channel they used. There is some story here. There is a nice YouTube video here about this. Obviously, the things they were talking about in World War II related to the war, yeah, that were words that generally did not occur in Navajo Indian language. Fighter plane. Yeah, that's for some reason the Navajo Indians didn't have a word for that. But what they did is, let me see, fighter plane, they actually translated that to hummingbird. And hummingbird, that was a word that existed in that language. And so instead of fighter plane, they spoke about a hummingbird. And the other, the receiver, they heard the word hummingbird, said, oh, yeah, fighter plane. Very useful use of these Indians, of these native Indians. I think the last code talker, they were called code talkers. I think the last one died not so long ago. I talked last week about the CIA triad, so do this very quickly. We talk about confidentiality, integrity, and authentication, and all of these, actually that should be availability, but authentication is better here. All of these can be provided by crypto in a very, very easy way. I will show that. But before I can get to that, some of the terminology. You saw in the definition already, but now I'll define them. When we talk about crypto, we have two types of text. One I call the plain text, so the information in an understandable format. As you see here, that sentence is plain text. Everybody can read it. And then there is the ciphertext. And the ciphertext is actually the plain text gobbled around in some way such that at least it looks unintelligible, that you can't understand it, that a third party can't understand it. The way that I get from my plain text to my ciphertext is actually using some kind of algorithm. And there are two kinds of algorithms. One is called the encryption algorithm, and the other is decryption algorithm. An algorithm is just a fixed way of making a transformation. And so the encryption is transforming the plain text into the ciphertext, and decryption is the inverse of that. But if I would just have a fixed algorithm and a fixed plain text, I would always get the same ciphertext. There is a secret part also, a key. So actually the algorithm has two inputs. It has a plain text or a ciphertext as input, depending on if I'm doing encryption or decryption. And the second component is the key. And often you can assume that the algorithms are not secret. Algorithms are often published and are available for everybody. Secrecy is always in the key. So here we see it again, but now in a picture. We have the plain text, hello world, and the encryption algorithm is taking this plain text, is taking a secret key as input, and out comes some kind of ciphertext where we can't make anything of that. And then the receiver will get this ciphertext, use it in the decryption algorithm again with a secret key, and out comes the plain text again. These were inverses of each other. And so this is, in a nutshell, what encryption is. What crypto is, I should say. Some more terminology. we're sending messages, right? And when we're sending messages, we're sending a message from one person to another. And the two most famous persons, let's say in literature, in academic literature, are the ones that are always in crypto. And one is called Alice. And Alice has a message. Alice wants to talk. And Alice wants to say something, and she wants to say it to Bob. Bob has to listen. Yeah, so Alice and Bob are always the two communication partners. And they want to have a secure communication between them. But there are more people around. If there was just Alice and Bob, Alice could just shout her message. Nobody would listen to it, right? Except Bob, hopefully. Yeah, so there is a third person, Eve. And Eve is evil, or eavesdropper. And evil Eve wants to know what Alice is actually saying to Bob. On the way back. So these are the people that we generally see, Alice and Bob, when we talk about the cryptography, so when we're talking about making a good crypto system, and Eve when we're doing the cryptanalysis to see what Eve can actually learn. There are two more. There is Carol and Dave. Carol and Dave we don't use very often. Carol and Dave will only appear if there are more people in a communication protocol. But Alice and Bob will always be there. So we have Alice here, and Alice has a message. Alice found something out, and she wants to tell that to Bob. Yeah, and so Alice has a message, and she wants to send that to Bob. But then Eve comes, and Eve wants to see or listen to what Alice was saying. Yeah, and if crypto all works perfect, this is not a big deal. Because if crypto works perfect, at the end, Bob says, I just know what you just told me. And Alice, she will still be in the blue. She doesn't know anything. Yeah? So, that's all you need to know about crypto. At least the basics, not the details. Let's go to something very much more interesting. A bit of history on crypto. Crypto is not new. Crypto is very old already. And mentioned a few names here, Leonardo da Vinci, Voynich manuscript, not really examples of crypto, but interesting to include anyway. And then it started all with the Caesar cipher and then some more afterwards. So this is from Leonardo da Vinci. This is a picture taken from one of his documents. And can anybody read that? Does anybody know what Leonardo da Vinci actually did? Yeah, exactly. So it's not real secret, but it is hiding the information in some way, right? I couldn't read it if it was in plain, but yeah, you have to read backwards and mirror everything. Yeah, so he did some small tricks to make sure that all that he wrote down was not immediately visible to everybody. Here is the Voynich manuscript. This is one of the books that people have found, and actually they have no idea what to do with this. They have no idea if this is just made for fun or if this text is really something. But if you let me see if I can go to that. If you want to see the document, it's online. You can just go through it and you see all these nice pictures, very detailed pictures. And there is some text around it also. Let me see if I can zoom in. I think that's possible. If I have a mouse. Looks like some kind of story written down, and you see some of these characters repeated, even focus. But yeah, people have not been able to determine if this is just one of the first hoax or if this is really somebody describing something about most likely plants. in some secret way. Let's close that one. Okay. So yeah, is this crypto or is this something else? We are not actually sure. Let's go to the next slide. Before I go to the Caesar cipher, I want to introduce some notation just to make sure that that you understand what I'm talking about. I say that a ciphertext is the result of encrypting some kind of message with the key K. I'll make this notation. Sometimes if I can't have subscripts, I'll write it like this. Yeah, just E stands for the encryption algorithm, and K and M obviously for the key and the message for the plain text in that case, and C stands for the ciphertext. And decryption is in the same way. I use a D instead of an E. Nothing very special. Oh, and modulo. Who knows what modulo calculation is? Yeah, most of you. If I would say what is the time approximately then 50 hours from now, you first say, okay, 50 hours from now, that is 2 days plus 2 hours. Yeah, so what is the time 2 hours from now? It's now 11:30, so it will be 1:30 then. Yeah, I'm not interested in the day, I just ask what the time is. But that's modulus. Yeah, I calculate, if I want to know A modulo M, I'll keep subtracting M from A until I end up with a value B that is between 0 and M minus 1. That's what we're going to use in the Caesar cipher. So here we have the in the Caesar cipher, a message will simply be a single letter, just to the in the beginning. A single letter A to Z, we just use 26 letters now. Ciphertext, again, is just a simple letter, A to Z. And the key, similar, just a letter. But I can't do calculations with letters, so what we'll do is we'll have some kind of translation. So instead of an A, I'll use the number 0. Instead of B, I use the number 1, etc. Up to 25 for the Z. And then my encryption is just saying, okay, the number representing the letter M and the number representing the key K, I'll just add them, modulo 26. That's everything I do. Nothing more, nothing less. Decryption is the other way around. Instead of adding something to the plain text, I'll subtract something from the ciphertext. So I have the number represented representing the ciphertext C, and I have the number representing the key K, and I'll take the difference, and that's the decrypted value. Obviously, if I have a message, and I encrypt it, and I send it to you, and you decrypt it, you should get my message back, right? That would be fun. Yeah, so that's the question. If I encrypt something and I'll send this message and then I decrypt it, do I get the same thing back? Note that I am encrypting and decrypting with the same key. Yeah, so people have to have some kind of agreement on what key we are using. So let's see if this happens, if this is indeed true. Let's see. The encryption of a message M with the key K was just adding these two numbers modulo 26. Nothing special here. That's just the definition. And then the definition of decryption was subtracting the key. Yeah, so actually I get the message that I had, so the ciphertext, that's here, minus the key, and then modulo 26 again. Well, this modulo 26 in the middle, I can do that at the very end. Doesn't matter when I do modulo calculation. So actually what I get is M plus K minus K. Well, K minus K is 0, so I can forget about that. And I'll end up with M modulo 26. Well, M was a letter, A to Z. And A to Z was translated into 0 to 25. Yeah, and each of these numbers modulo 26 will just be the number itself. So M modulo 26 is the same as M. Ah, so indeed, I have a message, I encrypted it. And if you decrypt it with the same key, you get my message back. So that's good. Let's have an example. I will not tell you the outcome already. I want you to figure out the encryption with the key D, and then I'll encrypt the full word. Yeah, and the full word is just encrypting it letter by letter. And I want you to encrypt the word hello. Simple as that. So just try that and see what you get. Let's see what we get. The key is D, which is represented by the number 3. The H is represented by the number 7. So encryption means adding those two modulo 10, which is, modulo 26. Well, 3 plus 7 is 10. And that I did not put it down here. That is actually represented by the letter G. Isn't that? Okay, of course. Sure, one before the L, yeah. So that one will go to K. E is represented by 4 and D by 3, so together 7, so that is H. And that one. L is 11 plus 3 is 14, which is the O, twice. And then the O was 14, and that will be 17 O EQR. That will be R. Did everybody have that? That's very simple. And actually, you can do the decryption by going back and you say, okay, that is it, represented by the number 10, and I have to subtract 3, that is 7, and 7 is the age. That's very simple. So very easy to encrypt and decrypt. Yeah, and if somebody sees KHOOR, they have no idea what we're talking about. What about the security of the CISO cipher? Is this a very secure cipher? Doesn't seem so, right? There are a full 25 different keys. Actually, not 26. Yes, technically speaking, 26, A to Z, but A is 0. And adding or subtracting 0 doesn't do anything. So if I would, I would have the encryption with the A, would get the same word again. Yeah? So 25 different keys only. And yeah, just test them and see which one works. No more, no less. So here we have a text. And I encrypted that with the CISO cipher. So how would you decrypt that? What would be an approach for the cryptanalysis? Yeah? Okay, so I have to repeat it for online. The idea was to take a single word and then make shifts of that word and see when you get an intelligible word and then... Yeah. So let's look at the first word. That started with L, Q, I, R, etc. And I shifted one position, so I get MRJS, not a real English word. And I'll keep shifting it, and I keep shifting it all the way until I've shifted it 25 times, and then I will get back to the old one again. And if you look here, there it says information. Actually, that's the only intelligible word in this list. That could be two words. Yeah, then I'll just try each of them. Yeah, but in this case, only information is intelligible. So if I have the ciphertext and I shift it 23 times, I add 23, then I'll get back. So actually what I did is I have subtracted 3. Yeah, 3 and 26. 3 and 23 are each other's complement modulo 26. So apparently, KS3 was used. So what I'll do is I'll shift all the symbols, all the letters, 3 positions backward, or 23 forward, that's all the same. And then you get something like, hey, information security is an interesting area of research, of study, sorry. Which it is. Yeah? So very easy. Once you have determined what the shift was to do the encryption, you do that. And to get to that is just trial and error. There are only 25 possibilities. So in terms of security, 25 different keys doesn't really provide us security. I could have done it in a different way. I could have looked at the statistics in the text. What's the most common letter in the English language? If I shift all the letters over a fixed position, there is again one letter that will pop out, right? Statistics won't change. So the most common letters, there are some more, of course, E, T, A, I, N, R. Those are very common. Q, Z, those are less common, of course. So here is the statistics on English letters. Taking over huge amounts of text, of course. Yeah, and you get this distribution. E was 12.7%. What else did we say? We say T, 9%. A, we have 8%. So you can see something. And here, Q is very little. J is very little. X and Z occur very infrequently. So if and I compare what I know statistically of English text and what I know of my ciphertext. So the ciphertext that I presented a couple of slides back, I did analysis on that, and I'll get these statistics. And then I'm going to look, and I'll see some similarities. What I have to do is actually make a shift of this distribution and see how well it fits the distribution that I know. And actually, I noticed some similarities. Here, I need one more. Here, it's a very high occurrence of letters, and then two which are very low, and then two which are a bit higher again. I see that here too. Very high occurrence, and then two which are comparable and low, and two which are comparable and higher. And I see that occurring once more there. So I have two distributions that are two number of occurrences are approximately the same, and then the two beside them which are again much lower but also comparable. I see that happening here too. Yeah, these two are comparable and these two are comparable. These are much higher than these. And actually, I could look a bit broader. The one next is very low, and the one here to the left is somewhere in between these two and these two. Yeah, all that fits. And so apparently, this was mapped here and this was mapped there. And this is position 8, and the E was actually position 5. So if I shift everything 3 positions back, I would get a good match. And so again, I find that K is equal to 3. You should be a bit careful when you do this. The most occurring letter in the ciphertext was actually this one, number 23. Yeah, and so it's very tempting to say, oh, no, the E is the most common letter. And so this is the E. Yeah, but this is taken about, this is a distribution of a huge amount of text that were available. Newspapers, books, articles, whatever. This is just a single text. And the distribution of the letters in a single text obviously does not exactly match this. Yeah, and so in this case, what was that? I think that was a T, yeah. Yeah, the T is very high also, but not the highest, as it was in this particular case. Yeah, so be a bit careful when you do this. But we can look at statistical distributions. Okay, but same conclusion again. I can find these relations very quickly. At least if the text is sufficient, that I can make a nice distribution of the ciphertext. And seeing how it matches, and still have only my 25 possibilities of cyclically shifting this top distribution to match it with the bottom distribution. So we had 26 or 25 different keys for the Caesar cipher. But we can easily upgrade that number from 26 to actually 26 factorial. I shifted the E 3 positions to become E, F, G, H, to become an H. And I did the same with the A. I shifted it 3 positions to become D. Why should I do that for all the letters the same? Why not? Can I just take a random permutation of all the letters and use that as my key? So in the simple substitution, what do? It will be a permutation of the letters A to Z. That will be the key. And for example, A, B, C, D up to Z will be linked to F, N, H, I, etc., etc. So this is a permutation of the 26 letters of the alphabet. What does it mean? It means that the A is actually mapped to an F. And the B is mapped to an N. And the C is mapped to H, etc., etc. Still, if I see in the ciphertext an F, I know that it uniquely comes from an A. And if I see an N, I know that it comes from a B. So I can do encryption and decryption if I have this permutation. Oh, that's what I just said. And the number of possible keys all of a sudden is 4 times 10 to the 26th. Or in other words, what did I say yesterday? I said 400 million, 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 million. That's quite a big number. Yeah. It's not like we just sit and just try all of them. It takes a bit more time. Generally, the security of a crypto system is measured in bits. How many bits security? How many bits do I need to describe a key? Or all the keys, in fact. Yeah? 88 bits security. Maybe for the NSA supercomputer, that might not be a big problem. But for my laptop or any of your computers, you will not be able to do that. Yeah? Okay. So we now have a secure crypto system. Well, maybe not. Let's go to an example. Here I have an encrypted text. Any idea what it means? I made it easy for you, by the way. I did not remove punctuation. I did not remove spaces, etc. I just removed capitals. That I did. I made capitals into small letters. Just for making it easier for me to do the encryption. Any idea how we should tackle this? Yeah, we could do that. We could look at the statistics again. We could also, I can give you a hint. And I can see if that will help us. I will give you a hint. And the hint is actually, this is a text regarding tempest testing. Does anybody know what tempest testing is? No? It's here. I describe what tempest testing is. Oh. You just need to decode that. You know something about tempest testing. You know that tempest testing is actually a very interesting combination of words. Why is tempest testing a very interesting combination of words? What do you see in these two words, tempest testing? Yeah? Yeah. Cool, yeah, a repetition of letters. T, I see here. Oh, and again, and again, and again. I see four times a T. And actually, what more? I see the E, I see it again and again. So three times the E and the M. No, M is unique. P is unique. E, I had S I see twice. And then it says here ING at the end. ING is unique also. Yeah, I see that the first and the seventh, and the eighth, and the 11th there letter are actually the same. So what happens in a simple substitution? Those will be mapped to some letter. So somewhere I'll find a pattern where, let's say that they are mapped to a C. I'll just pick a C here as the first letter. Somewhere I see a pattern where I see a C, and then something else, and then six letters further on, I'll see a C again, and the next one again a C, and then three letters further on, I see a C again. Or any letter that where the T is mapped to. And the same holds for the E, because the second and the fifth and the ninth letter are the same. So in that pattern that I just found, this should also hold. And actually, this should also hold. Okay. Go ahead, find it. Actually, I made it easy for you because I have the spaces still in there. You don't have to look here. That's a three-letter word. It's not a seven-letter word. And so I made it a bit easy for you. But can you find tempest testing? Yeah? Yeah? We hope it's tempest. We don't know that. Yeah? Here I see, indeed, the first and the seventh letter are the same. And then if I continue here, yeah, that word starts with an I, and that was letter 8, 9, 10, and 11 is an I also. So pretty sure that the T is mapped to an I. And then the next letter was an E. E was here, T-E, M-P-E, that's correct, and then testing. Yeah, there's the E again. So the E is mapped to a Y. And actually now I know the T where it's mapped, the E where it's mapped, the S, and these five letters. Emping. So actually I now have eight letters known already. So just telling you that this is about tempest testing, I reduced the unknown part of my key from a permutation of 26 letters to just a permutation of 8 letters less. So just 18 factorial. And I have to just try 18 factorial keys. And then I'm done. Oh, well, 18 factorial is still a big number. I'm not sure what it is, but it is a bit too big for me to do that by hand. Let's see. We know something. I know that if I see an I in the ciphertext, it should be a T. And if I see a Y in the ciphertext, that I should map it back. I should decrypt it to an E. And it's not just in these two words, these two red words. It's all over the text. So what if I fill in what I know already? I'll get this. I see a lot of things already. I see the word C. Ah, that's cool. I decoded yet another word. I was maybe in doubt in the beginning because this could have been the encoding of C, S-E-E. It fits the pattern. Can be off, O-F-F. Also fits the pattern. I never said, by the way, that the F could not be mapped to the F. So this could be the word off. Could be the word all. Could be any word. Any word that fits this pattern. Can't be the word the. Because the H is first then mapped to an F, and then the E is mapped to an F. That's not possible in the simple substitution. Okay. So we see a lot of things already, but we still can't read it. We see the word C. There was another one. It was emit somewhere. Emit, yeah? Huh? Emit. It contains only those six letters. What was it? Eight letters that I knew already. Emitter. Anybody want to guess what this is? I will guess that the B is mapped to a D. So that will be the next step. Find something that you can now decode. I told you in the beginning, this is about tempest testing. Yeah, and that hint helped you to get this. And now I have this word in green already. Maybe I should not have given so much away. But that word, what would that be? What word starts with in and what would be the end of this word? Would that be a Q? No, highly unlikely. What would that letter be? Information. Yeah, that's not a letter. That's a full word. But yeah, information is indeed what is standing here. So I learned more. I learned actually that the H is mapped to, F is mapped to an H. And this was O is mapped to K, R is mapped to A, and that one we knew already. What did I say? O is mapped to a K. Hey, let's see. That happens here. So I get a check that indeed information is correct. And the A was mapped to, I forgot where it is, to C. Oh, but when I have that information, I'll just add it to everything that I knew already. I now found four more letters. So instead of my 26 unknown, which I in the first step reduced to 80 unknowns, and I'll again reduce it with 4. Filling in that, I see more and more. So the next question, what is here? Yeah, two words. And the other one is maybe a bit more difficult. Yeah, electromagnetic radiation. Yeah. And again, electromagnetic, yeah, two C's. You see, the C is a Q, and this C is a Q. Okay, that's correct. That's a check. I need to check in between. Because if I make a mistake in the first, and I say, okay, let's see, I think that the C is mapped to the A is mapped to an F, yeah, I'll start all wrong. So I have some checks in between. Electromagnetic radiation. And the text is forming. The partially decrypted text is going back to my fully decrypted text. All electronic what? Devices, yeah. I marked some words which I thought in the beginning when I was doing this text were easy. Reconstruct, obviously. already. How about this? Leaks, yeah. This one I thought later on when I was going over it, but I didn't want to change the styles anymore. This one could have been a bit difficult. Yeah? Yeah, how much? Okay, so apparently it's not that difficult. And again, I can use that information. I get some more letters. And these are actually the only ones that are missing. So devices, we already said everybody, possible. It could be different things, right? Could be my. Could it be my? No. We know already the M. So it can't be my. Actually, it's by here also. Quality here, big. Yeah, at some point you know also that, okay, I already know the how the M was, let's see, many. The M was encrypted as an X. Yeah, and so here, by. So the P can't represent the M. It should be something else. So I know even more and more. And so I get my fully decrypted text. So now you can read what tempest testing actually is. It was a military technique before and actually classified. And now it's more open. Next, you will notice that we actually found how 23 letters were encoded. Because in this plain text, it doesn't use the other three letters. So we don't have the key yet. Is that a problem? We have a large part of the key. But we don't have it exactly. There will be six keys left, six potential keys. Is that a big deal? Besides the fact that 6 is a small number, and I could, in fact, test everything. Are you interested in the key? No. You have this. You have the text. Why need the key? If I could have gotten this in any other way, I would be happy. Yeah? So you don't need the key, per se. Cryptanalysis is about retrieving the plain text. And not about retrieving the key. If I have the key, and sure, if I know that that key is reused in another place, that would be handy. Yeah, specifically, you know, part of the key in this case. So if you find another text that would be encrypted with the same key, you could use that already to find a large part of the other ciphertext, and then maybe need to do a bit more work to find other if the other three letters are used. Not sure which ones are not used. I think X, J, and Z are not used, if I remember correctly. So Caesar cipher clearly wasn't good. Only 26 keys. And simple substitution doesn't really help us either. Why? Because, yeah, I can reduce the 26 factorial different keys, of which one, by the way, is very trivial. A map to A, B map to B, etc. So actually I have 26 factorial minus 1 keys. But still, despite the fact that there are many, many keys, 400 million, 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 yeah, I still can break this. Well, actually, what did we see in both the Caesar cipher and in the simple substitution? What characteristics can you tell me of these two systems? There's something very specific on in both of them. Yeah? Yeah, okay. The frequency of the letters are kept. That's correct. But I wanted to state it in a different way. They are called monoalphabetic ciphers. Why? Because an A is always replaced by something. And that will be the same. Every A in the plain text will be replaced by the same letter. It's not that an A is once replaced by an X and the other time by a Q or an R or whatever. Yeah. Each plaintext cipher character is always replaced by the same ciphertext character. There's no variation in that. There can be variation. Then we call it a polyalphabetic cipher. So a plaintext character, an A, can once at one point it can be encrypted as D, and the next time it is a C, and the next time it is an R, and the next time it can be R again. That I don't say that it can't repeat, but there are many possibilities. Maybe it stays at A. Yeah? So here is an example of that, the Visionaire cipher. The Visionaire actually consists of R Caesar ciphers. And although the Caesar cipher was not very secure, we saw that, Visionaire is more secure. More. Actually, what in the Caesar cipher, we had the key, and the key was a single letter. In the Visionaire cipher, the key is actually a word, and the word has length R. Let's look at an example. That's easier to explain. So here I have the text, and I removed now the spaces. Visionaire cipher is polyalphabetic. I just told you that. And the key that I use is the word crypto. And then I repeat crypto over and over again. Crypto, 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 crypto. Until I get to the end. And maybe it doesn't, the last letters are not the full key, but yeah, then I'll just cut it off. But I'll keep repeating the key over and over again. And then actually the encryption is done in the same way as before. V plus C is X. And C is represented by the number 2. Yeah, still there. And so I go two positions further in the alphabet. V, W, X. I plus R is Z. G plus Y is E. Etc., etc. Well, that's pretty secure, right? Let me see. The E. The E is mapped to the T here, and then to the S, and then to the V, and then to the G. Alphabet, and then to the C again. Did we have a C? No, I don't think so. Yeah. So the E is mapped to all kinds of different letters. So any statistics is gone now. The I is mapped to the Z, it's mapped to the X, it's mapped to the G, mapped to the B. Yeah, I can't find it back. How would you break the Visionaire cipher? We know how we broke the Caesar cipher. Yeah, if I have letters, I just start shifting them and see if something pops up, or I use the statistical analysis. And we broke the simple substitution by knowing something about the text and then filling in the blanks. How would you do that with the Visionaire? You had an answer or suggestion? Okay. Let's recap that. You more or less said what is on the next few slides. So for the people who are just listening, you gave the more or less the correct answer. If I know the length of the key, then it's broken. Why? Indeed, I'll take the first and the, let's say the key is length 3, the first and the fourth and the seventh and the tenth, etc. All of those are encrypted by the same letter. And then it's all of a sudden it has become a Caesar cipher. Oh, yeah, but Caesar cipher doesn't mess up the statistics. All right, I'll use the statistics then. And then I look at the second and the fifth and the eighth and the 11th letter. Again, a Caesar cipher. and I'll figure out what that key is, looking at the statistics. Yeah, so looking at the I can't look at words. I can't get words back. But I can look at the statistics to find that back. So here we see that, more or less that ID, the V and the R and the E and the L and the A are all encrypted by the C, which is a simple Caesar cipher. And so looking at the statistics there, I will be able to find something back. Not in this short text, of course. But assume that I have a text of the size that I've shown you before. And then the second and the seventh and the 13th and the 19th and the 25th letter. They are all encrypted by the R. Again, fairly simple Caesar cipher, and I can look at statistics. So I said, if I know the length of the key, I'm done. So that's the only problem. What is the length of the key? We can actually find that by what is called a technique that is called the index of coincidences, or the incidence of coincidences. It's a mathematical method. I will not go into that here and now. If you're interested, I can try to describe it in a kind of understandable way. But what you do is you look at the ciphertext, because that's the only one you have. You don't have access to the plaintext or the key. So you look at the ciphertext, and you shift the ciphertext over a number of positions. And then you look how often letters are the same and how often letters are not the same. And actually, if you shift exactly over R position, so the key length, then all of a sudden you will see something related to the distribution of English text. English letters. Sorry, I should say. If I shift it over any other value, well, over 2R I get the same. But if I shift it over somewhere between 0 and R minus 1 positions, I'll actually get a random distribution, and actually all chances are evened out. Yeah, I will not go into the details, that's a bit too far here. But shifting it and looking at the statistics there, all of a sudden if I shift it one position, two position, three position, you get a random distribution. And all of a sudden if I shift it over R positions, the distribution changes. And that's what we are looking for. And once I know that, I can go back to what we had on the previous slide, what we talked about, just breaking each of these R Caesar ciphers. 12:15, I see, or almost 12:15. So I guess that will be a nice time for a break. We'll just start again 15 minutes from now. Okay? Any questions, by the way, so far? Yeah? That's an assumption. Sure. If you are sending a text to your mother, I'll assume that it is Norwegian. If you're sending a text to Bernard Hamely, are you taking his course too? Yeah, I'll assume that it is English. Yeah, or maybe if it's not English, if I see that I get into trouble with the English, I'll try German. I'm not sure how good your German is. So I have to make some assumptions on. I know Alice and I know Bob, so I know how they talk, right? If it is in Norwegian, it could be actually that I have to do the calculations modulo 29 instead of 26. Yeah, but yeah, that's an assumption, an underlying assumption. Yeah, one more question. So the question was, how do I handle compression? Indeed, if there is a compressed text, then the distribution is flat, I assume. I actually would get into trouble with these systems. Luckily, Caesar did not have a lot of compression algorithms available. The Caesar cipher, by the way, is named after Julius Caesar. Yeah, so he used that to send his message. He used a fixed key 3, so the D value. Yeah, so it's not something made up and named after him, but he actually used this system. I don't know how to use compression. So if you use compression, what you have to do is look at the text and then look at the result, which is a compressed text, and then see if you can decompress it. Yeah, that's certainly in CISO Cypher, it's still doable because it's just 26 different keys. Yeah. More questions? If not, then we'll start our 15-minute break actually now. Okay, see you soon. Okay. Let's continue a bit with some more ciphers. So far, the Caesar cipher and simple substitution were not the best. Visionaire made it maybe a bit more difficult, but not really. But actually, there is a version of Visionaire that is secure. It's called the Venom cipher, the one-time pad. And it is the Visionaire cipher, except I do a simple trick. I'll make sure that my key is as long as my message. Because the attack that we just explained doesn't work anymore then. So the key is as long as the plain text. So here we see an example. I have a plain text, GIF, and I use the key UNMR. And so I do the encryption. G plus U is A, I plus N is V, V plus M is H, and E plus R is V. And then you come and you see this plain text, this ciphertext. Huh? I see the ciphertext. Or Eve, sorry, Eve is doing that, of course. Eve sees the ciphertext. She knows nothing about the plain text nor the key, so she guesses a key. And she guesses, any guess is as good as another, so she guesses TFDG. What will she get now? That's a bit difficult to do that from your head, but she would actually get take. And give and take are rather different things, so. Yeah, she gets something that could be real. It's an English word, but it's not the one that we were looking for. So the Venom cipher is secure if you use it correctly. There is a link here where there are some examples where actually the Venom cipher was used in a wrong way, the one-time pad, and that made the communication easy to break. So this is the only crypto system that is secure, the only one that is unbreakable and impractical. Why? Because you need a long key. If I want to send you a book, I need another book to encode it. Yeah. So it's only used in cases where there is a real need for the highest level of security. Yeah. One example was the hotline between Washington and Moscow. There are more. Yeah. But if you use it in the wrong way, yeah, it doesn't become effective anymore. So much for these classical crypto systems. There are two other systems that I would briefly say something about. We have, I think, 20 minutes before, actually, the break was a bit late. Your own fault. You should stop me after 45 minutes. So we'll have this session is a bit shorter. These are two machines, which are so-called rotor machines. It's the Hagelin, which is Swedish, and the Enigma, which is German. So this is the Hagelin, and this is the Enigma. These are actually the rotors. That's why they call the rotor machine are here also. And you see this. I will go into the details of the Enigma. You'll see a keyboard that you can type on. And actually, these are light bulbs. And every time that you press a key, one of the light bulbs will start burning. And then if you close it, this will come over the light bulbs, and there are letters on it. So a letter will light up. When you press a key, you press one of these keys, and a letter will light up. This will only do the encryption. So what happened is, somebody was typing on the Enigma. There was a man standing, or a woman standing next to him, making notes of the letters that were lighting up. And then they were going to the telegraph operator, and that he was sending the encrypted message. And on the other end, the encrypted message was noted. Somebody would go to this Enigma again with the same settings of the rotors and everything else, and then they would type in that text and they would get the original back. So why are they called rotors? Well, they are called rotors because there are rotors in here, but inside a rotor you have some kind of wiring. So if inside the rotor, if the input to a rotor is an A, the output will be a C. And if it's B, A, etc. In this particular case. Yeah, you see, and that was fixed. This wiring is fixed, as you can see here. But the rotor would then turn. And so this straight through connection would then turn one place up or down. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Yeah, and then the A would actually connect to the E. Yeah, the A, this the B would go one letter up, and then the A would go one letter up if the rotor shifts. Yeah, think about it in that setting. So here we have a manual animation. This is the Enigma. There were three rotors, as you could see in the picture, with some internal wiring. And then the connection between the rotors is just straight on. And then at the end, I can show that too. At the end, no, that's not the Enigma, there it is. At the end, we have this Umkehrwalz. So power is going through the rotors and then turning back. And then here at the front, you see a Steckerbord. Excuse me for my German. And you could actually make 10 connections between two letters. So for example, if you made a connection between an A and an E, then if you type an A, actually it would encode as an E if that stacker would not be there. And so you had 10 of them. So out of 26 letters, you could actually make 20 connect together. And these other six would just be as themselves. The rotors inside the Enigma, they were fixed. There were 5 rotors. You could exchange rotors, and the order of the rotors and everything, that's an unknown. This was fixed. These you could plug in your own way. So that was the key is, how are these plugged in? Which rotors are selected as on the left, middle, and right position? And what is the initial setting of the rotors? That was the key. And there were apparently 150 million, million, million keys. I hope that was correct. I just watched a movie about it, and I think that was the correct number, which is a huge number, specifically if you're talking about World War II, when this machine was used. They could not use these devices that you have. Yeah, your mobile phone probably has more computing power than they had at that point in time. So those were the rotors, and so this was this is how the Enigma works. I'll type an A, for example. Do something? Yeah. I type A, and so what happens? Well, the Stecker at the beginning, don't smile, that makes me feel bad. It will turn that into another letter, I don't know exactly, I think it's an E or something like that. And then we'll go to the first rotor, which will put it into another letter. We'll go to the next rotor, we'll go to the third rotor. Then it will turn around, and then it will follow the same way. And at the end, some letter comes out, I don't know. Once I've done that, this rotor will shift one position. So we'll just make a click. Yeah, and so where this connection was before, that will just go one up. So we'll keep rotating. Once this has gone over all its 26 positions, and it's back to its original position, this one will go one shift, etc. When this one has gone 26 square times, this one is round also, in its original position again, this one will make one step. It's like a clock. If the second hand is round, the minute hand will just move. If the minute hand has gone round, the hour hand will move. So that's how this works. There is a very interesting movie about breaking the Enigma. Who has seen The Imitation Game? I think it came out a year ago. Not everybody. Okay, then I can show the intro. See if this works.
This war. We're not winning it. you speak a word of what I'm about to show you, you will be executed for high treason.
It's beautiful. It's the greatest encryption device in history, and the Germans use it for all communications.
Everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Let me try, and we'll know for sure.
Mr. Turing, do you know how many died because of it?
I don't.
Three. While we've been having this conversation.
Gentlemen, meet Mr. Turing.
We ought to work together, then. I'm afraid these men would only slow me down.
Popular at school, were you?
We're short on staff.
We get more staff, then. You have 6 minutes to complete the task.
Is it even possible?
No, it takes me 8.
5 minutes and 34 seconds.
You said to do it in under 6. What is it that we're really doing?
We're going to break an unbreakable Nazi code and win the war.
Oh.
You know, to pull off this irascible genius routine, one actually has to be a genius.
I'm designing a machine that will allow us to break every message, every day, instantly.
You're going to need all the help you can get, and they are not going to help you if they do not like you.
Have you decrypted a single German message?
You will
never understand the importance of what I am creating here.
Our patience has expired.
No!
If you fire Helen, well, then you'll have to fire me.
Me too.
And me.
It better bloody work.
Helen, you do not have to do this alone.
What are you doing? What's going on?
The Navy thinks that one of us is a Soviet spy.
You've got more secrets than the best of them.
What if I don't fancy her in that way?
Can't tell anyone, Helen. It's illegal.
I'm just a mathematician.
Sometimes it is the people who no one imagines anything of who do the things that no one can imagine.
So that is where Alan Turing built one of the first computers. And actually, that computer was testing all the possible keys. Unfortunately, there were way too many possible keys. And so the trick they had to do in the very end is to make sure that they could eliminate as many keys as possible. And actually, they knew that a number of... They could eliminate keys because they knew some of the text that was in the that wasn't encrypted. So every morning at 6 o'clock, every night at 12 o'clock, they changed the key. And so every attempt that they had during that day, that was finished. But every morning at 6 o'clock, they started sending out messages again. And the mistake that they did is they started with sending the weather report for that day. And what's in a weather report? Well, there it says something weather. Or something like that. There are a few words that can be seen in that weather report. And the weather report nicely always ended with Heil Hitler. And so we have another word, Hitler. Yeah, and knowing a few of these words, the time was in there. I think 6 o'clock was also used. Knowing that these things are in the encrypted text actually helped eliminate so many keys that the current key, the current settings for the Enigma were broken within a few seconds or minutes. Yeah, and so every time they could use this. If you want to see the full movie, yeah, you have to spend some money. Strangely, I was in Germany yesterday, and I tried to look at this preview, and it wasn't available in that country. And then I wanted to see the full movie, and I could do that. So if you're back in Germany, then you can look at this movie for free. Here you have to pay. Let me go back to the slides. I want to show another video. Still have 10 minutes. This is a presentation about how the Enigma works.
So let's have a look at this machine. So if I open up the lid. There you go. And there it is. And it's a beautiful thing. There it is. It's a beautiful machine. It's 1930s styling. It's all black and silver highlights. It's all wood and steel. Very nice. Very mechanical.
Here you see. With the lid closed, you'll see the numbers. You'll get a close-up of that in a minute anyway.
But let's see how it works. So let's say I send you a message. I'm going to send you a message in code. And it should be something in German, really. should be something about Bratwurst or Schnitzel or something like that. Or Schadenfreude. But I'll keep you. I'll just say hello to you. I'm going to say hello to you, right? So I'm going to type in hello in the machine. Let's see how it works. So when I type in hello, I'll do the H first. And I'll press H. There we go. Now, if you can see that, the letter C lights up. The code lights up. That's H becomes C. Let's do the E for hello. E, there you go, becomes an I. So this is the code. L is an M. The second L in hello becomes a Q. And you finish it off, you do the O.
You know that now.
You get an M again. That's interesting. So that's the code. The machine doesn't transmit. It never did. It doesn't send anything. Someone has to stand next to it and write down the letters that light up. There is a reason it lights up. If you built it with a carriage, like a typewriter with paper, it made it heavier. It made it 8 times heavier. So that was the reason why it lights up, to make it portable. But you may have seen something odd about that. So the two L's in hello were two different letters. So old-fashioned codes, if you had double letters, they become double letters in your code. And for a code breaker, you can use that as a clue, helps you work it out. But this is different. No, a double letter might not be a double letter. If I do this again, if I press A, what have I got? I've got E there. If I press A again, I've got L, and it will keep changing. And there's no pattern to this. There's no way to know what it's going to be next. So you can see why the Germans thought they had an unbreakable code. I'll show you how this works. I'll open up the lid.
Have an answer online. Sorry for not turning on the mic. I was asking for another weakness of Enigma. So we talked about the fact that we knew some of the words that were transmitted, but that is a weakness of the way that Enigma is used. But what is the weakness of the Enigma itself? If I start with an A, I could get a K or an L or whatever. Yeah, I'll get different letters. Which letter don't I get? You can't get A back. If you look at the wiring, how should it be wired? When it's turned around, it's coming back over a different path. It's never turned back to itself and then. Yeah, so an A is never mapped to an A. A D is never mapped to a D. And that was one of the weaknesses. In the film, they will focus on the fact that they had the weather report every morning at 6 a.m. Yeah? Another weakness was, another thing that they exploited was the fact that in Italy, the Italians were using the Enigma also. They were partners of the Germans. And in the morning, every first message that they were sending out was the same letter T every time, over and over again. And actually, they could see a message where no T was in there. So that gave the clue. I will not play the full video. The link is in the presentations anyway. Let's go there. So just go there and look at that video. There are some more videos from the same guy. He's a very interesting talker. He will say also a bit, you have to find to look for that, but he says something about breaking the Enigma also. Now this is about the inner working of the Enigma, but he also has a nice video on how to break it. That was actually the last slide on this presentation. So that's something about the general background of Cryptosystems, Alice and Bob, and Carol and Dave and Eve, and something about the classical Cryptosystems. Your assignment will be on this topic. I will give you a cryptotext. How is it encrypted? I can't tell you everything. You decide what encryption I used. And you decide what the key was. And the plain text, of course. So, any questions about that? Is that clear? Is that assignment clear? You get a large text, by the way. So you can do statistics if you want or whatever. You can look for words, or you'll see the structure. I didn't remove any punctuation. I didn't remove any spaces. So some parts, I can tell you, it's from a book. Kudos if you tell me what book, by the way. I'll just took a part of text from that book, and then I encrypted that with a random key. Everybody has their own key. Everybody has their own part of the book. Yeah, so working together doesn't really help a lot. But I encrypted it with my crypto system, and then I will give you the ciphertext. Is what you need to do clear? Good. Write some programs for that. Don't try this by hand. Way too much work. Write some programs. That's part of the delivery also. Yeah. I've updated the description of the assignment this morning in Blackboard. So that should be up to date now. It was an old description. Initially, I wanted to ask you to implement a crypto system, DES or AES or whatever, SHA. I thought that's not nice. That's a programming task, not a crypto task. So now I'm giving you this crypto analysis task. This afternoon in the exercise sessions, what we'll do is work on that. So Kyle will be there, Marita will be there, I will be there part of the time. And then you get your assignment. I will send them out via email because everybody has their own. I will send everything out by email. If somebody didn't get it by 1 o'clock, yeah, come and talk to me. Then I might have made some error. Yeah, but by 1 o'clock, I should have been able to send out all 50 plus emails. You do some programming. You decrypt the text. You send me back the text and the key and the programs. And a short report on what you have done. Yeah, it's all in the description of the assignment in Blackboard. Deadline is 3 weeks from now. That should be sufficient time. Approximately 3 weeks from now. Any questions on that? You get 10 points per assignment. I guess this should be doable to get 10 points. Yeah, if you don't deliver. You don't get 10 points. All assignments are graded. Yeah, so there are 4 assignments. This is the first one, and you will get a grade for that. Well, this one is fairly simple. I look at your code, and I see if you didn't work too much with your friends. So I'll do some plagiarism checking, of course. And I look if you came up with the right way of doing the decryption and the right key and the right text. Yeah? So this is one assignment where you generally get a high number of points. Next assignments will be different. Other questions? The due date is 3 weeks from now, so approximately 3 weeks from now. It's actually the 21st of September. So including today, it's 3 weeks. But obviously, you are allowed to deliver earlier. No need at all to wait that long. Here I get a question online. Is it based on an algorithm presented in this lecture? Yeah, could be. Or could not be. Yeah, I can give you this. It's not the Caesar cipher. Yeah, that would be too easy. I had something else that I wanted to say. Yeah, next week we'll go into Symmetric Crypto, the book. I hope, is the book available already again? Not yet? Did you hear on when? Okay, I'll go and talk to them, because that's actually not acceptable. So I'll talk to them and see what can be done. The book covers symmetric and asymmetric crypto, so not so much this classical crypto systems. So the exercise session for this afternoon will focus mainly on the on this assignment. So if you're there, you can make a head start. If you're quick, you can finish your assignment today. I don't think it will cost you a huge amount of hours. Yeah, but some programming and whatever it's needed, we can cover that this afternoon. Next week will be the symmetric crypto. Yeah, and then we'll cover parts of this book, and then we'll do the exercises that are in this book. Yeah, if the book is not available, let's say by Monday, I will make copies and put them online for as long as the book is not available. Yeah, because you need to get access to this information. Yes? Other questions? Remarks? I have another question, which is totally unrelated to this this course. I'll do it anyway. Your students, you're always in need of money, I guess, I hope. I don't hope that. But sometimes there are jobs available. Last week I already talked about being a teaching assistant for this course the next year. There are also some programming tasks that we have available. So if you're a good programmer, specifically this the assignment that I have in mind is a C program that needs to be written. If you're interested, there is some money to earn by doing an extra task. Yeah, so come and see me in a break or in my office or in the exercise session or whatever, and we can discuss. Yeah, first month to mola. What is it? Was it in English? Yeah, exactly. No more than that. Yes. Yeah. Other questions? I don't see any questions online, so I guess it's okay. Okay, then thanks, and then I'll see you in the exercise session will be in K113. Yeah. Okay, see you then. Thanks.